Introduce our first speaker, Myra W.
Hi, family. I'm Myra, and I'm an addict. I'd like to thank East of the River Program Committee for asking me to speak tonight. And a friend asked me earlier, was I nervous about tonight? And I said, no, not until about 10 minutes before. So I've been sweating and trying not to look too mean and all of that, trying to relax. But what I did do was I went back to my hotel room and I did a prayer and meditation. And I tried to write down some stuff, y'all, about the topic. I even went to the literature because I had highlighted some stuff. Y'all know I don't remember none of that stuff, right? But I'm just talking about my experience and hopefully share my experience, strength, and hope. Like it says, and like we all know, you know, long before I picked up drugs, there was evidence of the disease. The first time I smoked marijuana, I was 13 years old, and the reason that I smoked it was because I was in a crowd of friends, and there were some older boys, and the bottom line was, it was very important to me at that point that I fit in, right? I really felt like marijuana was bad, you know, it was a drug. I had been taught that in school, but none of that mattered, you know. It had gotten... What? Okay. It had gotten to the point where fitting in and being a part of was more important than my own values. So, you know, I started smoking marijuana. I didn't even feel it. It wasn't even about getting high. It was about being a part of the crowd. And I continued to do that entire summer. And I'll never forget the first time I actually felt it. You know, I was sitting around. It was the 70s. We were sitting in a circle, passing joints and bongs and pipes and all sorts of things. And all of a sudden, the room went psychedelic, you know. All of my senses started to merge. I could smell colors, taste the music, you know. And I thought, oh, my God, this is what it's all about. So now it's gone from just trying to be a part of the crowd to trying to get back to that psychedelic feeling. And that went on for years. And it wasn't until I did some step work that I realized that from the beginning, I used to live and live to use. I identified out with that for at least the first 3 years of this program for me. I would hear that, but no, that wasn't me. You know, certainly at the end, but not in the beginning. But what I realized is from the very beginning, you know, I was smoking marijuana every day. Even when I didn't even feel it, I was smoking it every day. And once I got that high, you know, the unmanageability kicked in right away. You know, I went from a straight-A student to D's and C's are acceptable. You can pass with them, you know. I found that out. I realized that you only needed a certain amount of credits to pass school. So what I proceeded to do was hang out with my friends, get high every day, and the drug use escalated. We were now, you know, snorting coke and doing acid and doing all these different drugs, and I really expected to be a productive member of society, even though it was no longer important that I show up for life. I mean, that really was my expectation. I still had dreams and hopes that, you know, I would be successful, I would be professional, and needless to say, that didn't happen. I got married at a very early age, started to have children. I made a decision to run my own business so that I could manage my lifestyle the way that I wanted to, basically so that I could use and show up for work when I wanted to and that sort of thing. But at the time, I didn't realize that that's what I really was doing. And I was in this 11-year relationship, and when it ended, you know, I had three children. I didn't really think that I could take care of the children by myself. Me and the kids moved back into my parents' home, and I really felt like I had failed. You know, as long as I was, like, in the marriage, raising my children, nobody really knew my business and what was up. Nobody really knew, or at least I didn't think they knew, that I was smoked out every day, you know, that sort of thing. And the bottom line is, everything became just very glaring once I moved back into my parents' home. And I was in a lot of pain, too. My mom had just died. And the disease really escalated. I started self-medicating. You know, marijuana wasn't working anymore. I remember going to the street, asking one of the guys I grew up with, is there anything stronger out here? And he told me that there was crack on every corner. And, you know, I had never smoked it, didn't really know how to smoke it. So he proceeded to instruct me, told me what to do, told me I could lace the joint. It was easy to do. And just for a moment, you know, I wasn't in as much pain. I had more energy. I thought, okay, I found the answer. It was sort of like that psychedelic high. You know, one more time, I really expected, even though I saw other people cracked out, right? I saw people who I knew were intelligent people, good people. I saw them out on the street doing all manners of things that I couldn't believe they were doing, but I really thought that this addict could smoke crack, you know, and utilize it, not abuse it, but, you know, get energy when I wanted to get energy and stay up all night to be more productive. You know, unrealistic expectations. Well, 6 months later, I was dialing 411 in the middle of the night, and I asked for a drug hotline, and I got the NA helpline. And that's how I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. I called, and I got that recording, you know, give yourself a break. if you want to come to a meeting, press whatever number, and we'll give you meetings in your area. And it was the middle of the night, and I was so desperate. And I remember thinking, what? You know, I didn't even get a live voice. I was like, what? But sure enough, I wrote down the meetings, and I went to my first NA meeting. And, you know, you guys read the readings and said the steps like we just did. And I remember thinking, okay, this sounds religious. You know, I heard God mentioned a couple of times. The 12 steps and the 12 traditions were posted. Looked like the Ten Commandments, the Beatitudes, you know. And I really thought you guys were a cult. It was beginning to sound like the only way to freedom is through this way. You know, I was like, oh, that sounds familiar. But I was so desperate that I did keep coming back. But I really thought that I didn't have to do it the way y'all was doing it. You know, because first of all, you know, I'm pretty smart. I'm cracked out, but I'm pretty smart, you know. If I could just stop smoking crack and get back to using marijuana safely, you know, I'll be all right. And that was my goal. And you guys were talking about total abstinence, you know, and I thought, that's a bit extreme, you know. That's a bit extreme. And then, I heard a lot of stories that I couldn't identify in with, like, you know, heroin use, you know. I'm totally cracked out, but, you know, it's always, you can always find somebody you think is worse. And I was hearing these stories about hypes in the neck and stuff I hadn't done yet. And I thought that even though all evidence to the contrary, I really thought that I could manage my drug use. And the bottom line is I never used safely. You know, I already told you that from the very beginning, everything started spiraling down. Grades went down, everything, my own values. So, you know, I had to come around for a couple of years, in and out of the rooms. But I kept coming back, and I kept trying different combinations. Like, you know, I heard an addict share earlier about doing a first step with her sponsor. I was like, damn, that's my story. Because I would get, you know, I would try some of what y'all said, like get a sponsor. Okay, I would get a sponsor and, you know, call her. I would call her because, you know, I want somebody to listen to me. So, yeah, I call her. And, you know, I got one of these real serious sponsors, and she put me in the steps right away and Hell, it was like a homework assignment. Okay, you know, I can write a paper. So, I wrote this paper on the first step, and I was still using, right? I ain't tell that part. So, I came over her house, and she lit candles and, you know, burned incense, and I read it to her, what I had written, and she said, you know, there's some things that I usually hear in the first step that I don't hear in this one. And I'm thinking, damn, what did I miss? You know, in my head, like, what did I miss? And it wasn't until much, much later that I realized what was missing was surrender. You know, yeah, I told about all the shit I had done, but I couldn't fake surrender. You know, I couldn't even fake that. It wasn't even a concept I had any understanding of at that point. And she said, you know, I think you need to read the first step until I tell you not to, you know. And I thought, damn, who she thinks she is? You know I answered everything. Like, what? You know, unrealistic expectations. I really thought that I could fool this woman. I heard you addicts sharing about stuff like straight shooters, and at that point I was still, you know, lacing the weed, so, you know, I'm thinking, well, shit, I'm not that bad off, you know. Just a lot of things I heard. I thought that I could continue to use and I would not get as bad as the stories I was hearing. You know, that was really my expectation, that I could use a little bit, but it wasn't going to get that bad. Well, needless to say, you know, Shaja was saying some stuff I hadn't heard before, so I want to try it now. So, you know, I'd go back out and, you know, what's the deal with the straight shooter? Oh, that's a stem. You've never tried a stem, you know. So that's how I got introduced to that. And what happened was things spiraled down to the point. I started going into treatment, in and out of treatment, in and out of treatment. And I met this man in treatment. This is like my story. I'm always meeting some man, right? But I met this man in treatment, and I really thought that, you know, all I need to do is get into a loving relationship, you know, and get some support, and because I was recently divorced. So, you know, I need a loving relationship. Bottom line is, I picked the craziest dude in the treatment program, right? You know, I'm an outpatient. They got the ward upstairs. Dude coming down from the ward. And I scan the room. There it is, you know. And sure enough, you know, I flirted with him. And I said, I'll see you on Monday, you know, because I'm leaving. It's the end of the day on Friday. I'll see you on Monday. He said, I'm not going to be here. And I said, why are you not going to be here? You getting out? Give me your number. Where you going to be? He said, no, I'm going to kill myself. And I was like, oh, hell no, don't do that. You know, you're a valuable person. I've gotten to know you. You're beautiful. You know, I'm going to help him, right? Take my number. Call me over the weekend. So I'm going to save him. You know, I really expect with 90 days clean, I'm going to save this brother from suicide. I ain't tell no counselor, none of that. Just call me. And sure enough, over the weekend, we talk. By Monday, he was my boyfriend, you know. And about 60 days later, I was pregnant, right? And that was the first time, my first attempt at recovery, that I was really doing everything you guys said, because I had been doing it wrong enough. Everything except for, you know, don't get into a relationship. It was always something I was leaving out, right? But I had a sponsor. This time I was being honest. I wasn't using. Had the most clean time I had ever had. Had about 5 months, you know. And I did everything the program was telling me to do except for don't fuck with none of the brothers, you know. And bottom line is I got pregnant. And I remember thinking that was the worst thing in the world that could happen. I already had 3 kids that I couldn't take care of, and I wanted to have an abortion, so, you know, I asked him to come up with half the money. By the time I got pregnant, he was out of the program. Well, they kicked him out because we was in a relationship. And he had started working, and then he couldn't come up with this half of the abortion money. And the reality kicked in that if he can't come up with, you know, like $100-something, he's probably using. And when I realized that day, I used. So what happened was, now I'm pregnant and using, right? You know, I really thought I was going to escape all of that. I really did not think. My expectation never was that it would get like that. You know, I'm the mother of three, natural childbirth, all the kids born at home. You know, I'm really into birthing children and natural, been a vegetarian for 20-something. You know what I'm saying? Now I'm cracked out and pregnant and cannot stop. Cannot stop. Finally, I give birth to the baby. We both test positive. Child Protective Services is called. My ex-husband served me with custody papers while I was pregnant. And the reality that I'm about to lose my children really set in. Not just lose the baby, but all of them, you know. Because the one thing I did know was that if I continued to use, I was going to drag him in the crack house with me. It was, you know, it finally, you know, the powerlessness piece was setting in, that there's no way I'm going to have enough sense not to take the baby in the Jerry carrier, you know, in the crack house. And that was my bottom. That was my bottom, you know. So now that I've been in recovery, you know, so this time around, I got another sponsor. She said, yeah, baby, you know, I've been watching you for a couple of years. I can see you, you know, you've been struggling with this thing. And I did a real first step. I did the second step. The second step was easy because of all the evidence that had started happening in the first. When I stopped, when I finally stopped, things started happening for me. Things were definitely just synchronized. You know, the second step talks about miracles and coincidence, and that's how it was. Everything was synchronized. And, you know, I went to court for the custody thing. I got sole, legal, physical custody of the kids. The CPS case was dropped in like 30 days. You know, I got straight real fast. You know, I got straight real fast. But in recovery, you know, I'm one of those people that procrastinate, right? I want to be where you are and have what you have, but I don't want to do what I really know you did to get it. You know, I really, you know, think that somehow I don't know what I think is going to happen. I guess osmosis, I don't know. But the good news is that I have done enough to know, you know, some basic things. Like, I can't use no matter what, you know. That everything I need will be provided for me. I really do believe that as long as I show up, continue to do the work, everything I need will be provided for me. One of the things that I do, like I said before I came to share, is meditation and prayer, right? And I think it's realistic to expect in recovery for things to continue to work. And what I mean is, because of the experiences I went through, where I'm at in my life today is the job that I have is a direct result of being a mother, being pregnant, and not being able to stop using, right? That's the work that I do today. If I hadn't had those experiences, you know, I wouldn't be qualified for my job. It's like my title is mom addict, basically. I always joke about, you know, what's my title? You know, I'm the director of whatever, whatever. But really, I'm mom addict, you know. And the way that it works today in terms of being unrealistic expectations, I really don't expect to, like, have and get everything that I have and get. You know, I still kind of expect, even though intellectually I know, but there are times that I expect that, I guess what I'm saying is, I expect less, you know. I don't really value who I am and what comes my way, you know. Like, when it happens, it's wonderful, it's great, but I'm feeling like, you know, pretty soon the gig is going to be up and folks are going to know that I really don't deserve this, you know. Like, I really haven't totally grasped that, you know, I'm worthy. I'm worthy of everything that I've gained in recovery. Another area where I have unrealistic expectations is this. You know, I was a wife for 11 years, right? And I want to be married again. But I want to, you know, just be, hang out with you, right? I don't want you to trip and think, you know, anything will really happen. Not unless, you know, I think you're going to be my husband. And it's not realistic to think that I can be in people's space like that, you know? Be in people's space like that. Be intimate with people. And certain things aren't going to come up. Now, intellectually, I know. But I have a tendency to think that somehow I'm going to manage the feelings. Not just my feelings, but your feelings, too. Like, I'm not going to get too attached, so please don't you get too attached. You know, I want it to be this way, you know. I want you, basically, to go along with my program. And that's not real. You know, that's really not real. So I find myself, like, all over the place, you know, in extremes. Either, you know, I done heard your story, I know who you are, right? But I somehow expect it to be different with me, right? That ain't real, you know? So in the end, I can't be mad at you, you know? So that's just an area of my life I'm really trying to, really, really, really trying to grow in. You know, I'm really trying to just get to the place where, you know, I do value myself in all areas, you know. The main speaker tonight, that was really, really powerful. And it was the perfect preparation for me to speak, because he said so much, you know. And I'm really grateful to be here in Ocean City, you know. When I come to Ocean City, because of what I got the first year, you know, it's like that first hit. You know, I keep coming back expecting that hit. And I haven't been disappointed yet. There was only one time I came down here. and it kind of, you know, it wasn't what I expected. And that was the year I came down here on a relationship tip. You know, I rode down with somebody. I was all coupled up. And I will never do that again. You know what I'm saying? I will never do that again. Cause I'm very selfish, you know. I don't want to be on your time. I want to be on my time, you know. And, you know, this time I came down with a girlfriend, you know. I got a room to myself. I put it out to several addicts that I had a room alone, several. And a couple of people were supposed to come and stay with me, but they didn't. And for real, I'm going with the flow, you know. That's what I've been able to do, just go with the flow. I went back to my room, like I said, and I don't drive, right? And I'm like, how am I going to get back down to the convention center in time to speak? But I was in this prayer meditation thing, and I knew it was going to be all right, right? It was like, take the time to do this. I got the rest. I walked out of the hotel. I got dressed warm enough, first of all, because I might have to catch the bus or walk or whatever. And I walked downstairs. I called about a taxi first, and they were kind of rude at the front desk, right? I don't like, if I'm spending my money, don't be rude. Really, you're supposed to be real polite. But they were kind of rude. They didn't really give me no information about the taxi, so that's all right. I go down, and I'm about to pick up the phone or ask about taxi service, and something said, I already told you this is all right. Just walk through, you know. You in Ocean City, a bunch of addicts, no problem. I walked to the door, And there's like this black, I don't recognize people's cars. There's this black car, and it's about to pull off. And I'm like, but I go ahead and walk to the door, and then it stopped. The window rolls down, and it's like one of my best friend addicts. You know, come on, girl. I just wanted to share that before I close. Because that's how my life, even though I have those kinds of situations constantly in my life, I'm still like waiting, expecting the other shoe to drop. Like, it just can't be this simple. You know, it can't be this perfect, you know? And so far, in recovery, there hasn't been the other shoe. It hasn't dropped yet, you know? It just hasn't happened. And that's why I said that the brother sharing earlier was a perfect preparation, because he really, really got me in a place of just feeling that it's all in divine order. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you for sharing, Myra. Now I would like to introduce our second speaker, Bob J.
My name's Bob J, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. And she got picked to share earlier, and I got picked to share over there. You know, I never had expectations, and I was over there running my mouth with some other folks from Pittsburgh, and got asked to share, and it's truly an honor to share at any Narcotics Anonymous meeting at any time. I'm nervous in three or four people. And she was sharing about the kids and being married and CYS and all that, and my realistic expectation, I've been clean 14 years, and my expectations today is that, like, I'm glad to be here in Ocean City tonight, because 8 months ago I was diagnosed with lung cancer, and I was sharing that with some folks over there, and what it's been carrying me through, and I've been clean this long period of time, and I'm like, why me? You know, like, why now, after 6 years of not smoking and 14 years of not using, and, you know, and 31 years of not drinking, you know, and all that kind of thing, and why? Why now? Why now, you know, all this? And it's like, you know why? Because it's what's happening. It's what's going on with your life. You know, the past experiences down to now is why, you know, because, oh, man. I'd have never thought this being clean, that any of this would have happened to me being clean, that I'd have happy, joyous, and free life, blah, 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 blah. But it don't happen that way. You know, and it's me giving all this to God and allowing the expectations of just living, you know, because I'd have never thought that I never thought that I'd be in this situation, because life's been good for me. It really has been, and I think I'm feeling a little down, because it caught me off guard. I'm feeling a little down about all this going on with me, you know. I started getting high early in life, and I don't know. I ain't trying to bring nobody down tonight, you know. But I don't know where this is taking me. And I'm realistic expectations, because. But I ain't going nowhere. I'm dealing with this with regard to my understanding and with you folks and doing meetings and showing up, and and talking about it and sharing on it and getting closer to people that I really haven't been close to before. I'm loving life better, a little bit better now. I'm dealing getting closer to people. I'm more afraid of not being close to people than being close to people. You know, I used to be like not want to bring people down. I feel like I'm bringing people down, you know. You know, because this is some real stuff, man. And like, even like coming down here to Ocean City, man, I had talked to a friend into coming down to Ocean City, and he had never been away from Pittsburgh before to a convention. I said, come on, man, let's go down to Ocean City. He said, oh, man, I don't know if I want to go or not. I said, oh, come on. This was 3 months ago. And he registered and everything, you know. And I didn't even register until I got here today, you know. And I didn't even register until I got here today, man. And it's like, you know, and he's having a ball. I'm having a ball, too. I really am. Don't get me wrong. I ain't trying to bring you down. But I'm having a ball, too. And I guess I had to get past the part of having the lung cancer and going through all this other stuff. And in 2000, I lost my leg. You know, I have an artificial leg also. And the guy asked me what was wrong with the wheelchair. I said, well, it's easier for me to walk now, you know, with this artificial leg. I get around easier, you know, at the convention. And it's like, and I'm having fun. I really am, you know. And just to get him out of Pittsburgh, to get him down to here, and for us to come down and have fun. Because I'm such of a proud person that I like driving and doing what I want to do. And I'm such of an independent person that even with losing my leg and stuff, I like doing what I like to do. And I like going and doing it and for me. And it's hard for me to ask for some help. And I'm learning to ask for some help today. And for me, that's the unrealistic expectation, because I don't like asking you for help. Because I like doing it for me. Because I'm so used to doing it for me. I worked all my life. I had a job. I worked 27 years in the mill. I did this. I did that. I got around. I had a marriage. I lost that. I lost two marriages. But you know what? I'm okay today. I'm okay today. I'm having a tough time with. I share on it a lot. I share on it a lot about this cancer, and it's really. I don't survive a whole bunch of addictions, a whole bunch of shit, and I'm telling you, I don't survive a lot of things, man. You know, I'm gonna survive this also. It's just that I gotta get better at sharing on it. I gotta get better at talking about it. I gotta get better at coming to bring it to the forefront, because all the folks don't want to hear, oh man, you got cancer. Yeah, I got cancer, but you know what? I'm gonna get through this, and it's gonna be okay. It's gonna be okay, because God's gonna take care of all of this. And I was hearing her share on that on being addict mom. That's the first time I heard that one. That, you know, but that's the truth, you know, because we are our own eyes and ears around here, you know, and we have to look out for each other, man, and working these 12 steps and these 12 traditions and Narcotics Anonymous, man, has allowed me to get through all of this, you know, because the last 12 years has been tough, especially since 2000, you know, and losing my leg, and then last year finding out that I got cancer, and being getting okay with a lot of this stuff because of you guys, and working some steps, and being in service work, and being dedicated to not picking up the first one. Now, I don't pick up the first one, I got a shot at anything. I got a shot at anything coming down the pipe, you know. Now, I don't say a lot of profane things, but that's one of the most profane things I'll probably say all night, is don't pick up the first one, you know, because really I was coming to listen, you know, and this caught me really off guard, but I'm telling you, whoever stays, I hope I help myself, you know, because it's about helping me, because the more I get this out, the more I share on, the more I let you guys know that I'm hurting too. I may not seem like I'm hurting, but I'm hurting too, you know. And I didn't think I was hurting that much, you know, until I stood up just now and started sharing, you know, because Because I figured out a whole bunch of stuff to say, too, you know. I was sitting there while she was sharing, you know, and talking. I said, yeah, I'm gonna say this here, blah, 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 you know. You know, but you know what? Whatever comes out because it's God's will, not mine.
Right.
You know, that's what it's about. You know, it's about sharing and being open, being open-minded and being and staying open-minded, and staying willing and staying. Listen, if I stay in recovery, I can get past all this. You know, if I stay around you guys, I can get past a whole bunch of stuff, man, because I'm telling you, God's will is the best will in the world. And who knows what God's will is besides God? I don't know what God's will is. And all I ask the God to do is get me through the day. Get me through the day, God, and help me in all manners of my life, in all areas of my life. I put God in my life. You know, it's, well, I got past that, huh? Yeah, man. Because I didn't know what I was going to say, man. I didn't know. That's the truth.
Right.
You know, I'm telling you. It's look, I love being here with you guys. I've been in recovery for 14 years, and I try to do everything I can in recovery. I try to help the newcomer. I try to help myself. I just try to help, period. Because that's what it's about. It's the therapeutic value. One hand helping another. You know, we all fussing and moaning and groaning about different things, but look, it's about helping each other around here. You know, it ain't about what color, what size, what shape, or none of that. It's about the value of Narcotics Anonymous. It's about doing what Narcotics Anonymous would ask you to do in this program. The program works. This program works. Narcotics Anonymous works. When you hear somebody say this program don't work, look at yourself. The person needs to look at person. This is a selfless program. Not a selfish program, a selfless program. And this program works, man. It's been working since I've been here. It'll be working when I die. I'm telling you. Narcotics Anonymous is the greatest thing on earth. This is the best show going. I'm telling you, you can't beat it with a bullwhip. You can't. Because I'm telling you, if you give it up, man, then you struggle. I struggle when I stop working my program. When I stop working this program, I struggle bad. Real bad. When I continue to work my program, when I continue to work my steps, and I'm a service junkie, when I continue to do my concepts, my sponsor and I are doing concepts now. Well, we started doing that here lately. And when I start continue to do that, my program works great. But when I make it a personal thing, it don't work. This do not work at all. Now, I'm telling you the truth, man. Spiritual principle works. Personal principles do not work. It keeps your program messed up. It kept my program, my personal principle kept my program messed up all the time. And when I start working with you guys and working some spiritual principles and working God into it, then it works. Without a doubt, this program definitely works. You know, and I like this, I thank them for asking me to share over there. You know, I was just sitting there running my mouth. You know, but I like, really, because I tell you, I like showing up. I like listening to other folks here. I do. I like being around other people. I like being in recovery. I love this, man. I started this process back in 88, in 89, and relapsed a couple of times. Well, no, I just used. I didn't relapse. I just used. I wasn't working on nothing but me. You know, that's all I was doing. I wasn't working on nothing, man, but trying to get the next one a different way, a slicker way. That's all. That's all I was trying to do, trying to figure out, you know, how this girl can help me get this over here. You know, how I can help this girl get that over there to get this over here. You know, that's all I was doing back in 89, 88. And then I finally came to reality, man, that look, I come to learn how to use successfully, and I couldn't learn to do that. And my last run, I said, you don't remember your last run? You ain't done using it. I remember my last run. I wanted to die. Jump off the bridge up there, up to where I live at. That's my last run. That's why I'm here. Because I wanted to die. I wanted to kill myself. My last run. If I don't remember that, I'll use it again. I want to go jump off the bridge up there and kill myself. Took my mother and my counselor 3 days to talk me out of it. But I'm here. You know? Because Narcotics Anonymous works, man. This truly works, man. It takes away a lot of unexpected expectations if you work this program. It helps you work with anything that comes down the pack, man. Wow. Don't pick up the first one. Make a meeting. Meeting makers make it. You know, keep God in your life. Keep this program in your life. And those unexpected realizations, expectations, listen. Work with God. Work with God. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. Before we open the meeting up, for those who would like to share, please remember to come up to the podium one at a time. Also, keep in mind that there will be others who will want to share. Meeting is open.
Hi, everyone. I'm John. I'm an addict. I was listening to him, and it just made me think of, you know, some stuff. And probably my first unrealistic expectation was the day I got clean. You know, I was already trying to figure out how I was going to dope fiend the cops and get myself out of jam. And I figured, well, I'd go to those meetings and get notes signed, and I'd show up in front of a judge, and he'd pat me on the back and say, "Hey, you've been a good little boy, you know. Just don't do it again, and we won't give you no time." Didn't work out that way, though. And I ended up having to go away to the penitentiary and do some time. And you know, I've heard it said a lot of times, you know, if I would have wrote down what I expected to get when I got here, I would have sold myself short. And, you know, I had a lot of expectations of just being real successful and making a lot of money and having a nice house, and you know what, I've managed to do that stuff today, but you know what, that ain't what, you know, I really wanted when I got in here. You know, it's working them steps to help me find out what I really wanted, and was just to be loved. You know, I didn't really know that's what I wanted. You know, I didn't know how to be loved. I didn't know how to love myself. You know, I expected other people to do it for me. I expected other people to take care of me. I expected everything to always be handed to me. You know, my grandparents lost, you know, the supermarket in Pittsburgh through the Depression. And, you know, I grew up with a chip on my shoulder thinking that I should have been the next Mr., you know, whatever, you know, Bilo or Giant Eagle or whatever the supermarkets are down here. And it didn't work out that way. You know, I've had to work for things. You know, Bob was talking about the program working. There's something that I usually talk about whenever I share. It's, you know, don't join a swim club if you don't expect to jump in the pool. You know, that's insanity. Well, our steps are the pool. Jump in. They ain't going to hurt you. You know, they haven't hurt me. You know, if you don't stick around, please don't stand out there and talk about, the program don't work. Get real and be honest. Just say you didn't work the program. You know, because if we work the program, we get a different life. You know, we get things beyond our wildest dreams. You know, ultimately God and love. And that's what it's about for me. You know, me and Bob was talking a little bit before the meeting, you know, he was talking about black and white and some stuff going on back home and issues. And, you know, I can remember my first friend in life was black, you know, Frankie Phillips. I'd love to see him today. You know, I was listening to a CD on the way down here. My sponsor, me and Ball was talking about a bunch of things. My sponsor, expectations. I came into this program expecting to have people in my life for long periods of time. My first sponsor relapsed with 13 years. He hasn't been able to, you know, really make it back for any kind of period of time since. The sponsor I got to replace him, I expected to, you know, grow old and die with him. He died January 2nd of cancer. And, you know, it's real. People die. I mean, my best friend when I got clean, when I went to the penitentiary, he's the most faithful person coming to visit me in penitentiary, checking on my parents. You know, he died with 3 years clean. You know, so when I put expectations on anything, I set myself up for disappointment. You know, what I need to do is just, like, walk through each day to the best of my ability. Walk up and say, God, you know, what can I do for you today? You know, because see, what I've learned is when I put expectations on things, they fall way short anyways, you know. And when I just walk through stuff, I get way more than I could have expected anyways, you know, if I practice these principles in it. Because what I, you know, when I project things, you know, it's like, you know, I can remember I had 4 years clean. I got into this relationship with this lady. You know, she was what society quotes drop-dead gorgeous, you know, type thing. And I thought, well, having this, you know, on my arm, it would make me all right. And putting that expectation on it, you know what? It didn't work out. And I got hurt real bad over it. You know, there's two kids involved, and what I expect to be good often turns out to be my worst nightmare.
Yes. Yes.
And the things that I expect to be bad sometimes turn out to be a blessing in disguise. You know, example, the time in the penitentiary. I wouldn't trade that for a world. You know, I talk to people about that sometimes. They tell me I'm crazy, you know. But you know what? It's what made me it's what makes me who I am today. It's part of my being, part of my character. And I like John today. You know, I don't want to be Sam or Bob or whoever anymore. It's a result of working these steps. You know, I don't even expect to be loved today. You know, it's one of the things my sponsor said to me. He said, if I tell you I love you, or if you tell me you love me, do you expect me to say it in return? I said, well, yeah, sure. He said, well, that ain't unconditional. I was like, wow, never thought about it that way. You know, so today I just try to take care of me and try to be an attraction and live life to the best of my ability. And, you know, one of the things I find is when adversity goes on in my life, the biggest thing I can do is show up in a meeting and talk about it. It seems like whenever that happens, that's when everyone starts asking me to be their sponsor. And when I show up and I'm talking about I got the house or the girl, it's, you know, no one's really asking me to be their sponsor. I mean, I have sponsees, but it's when the shit hits the fan and I stay clean through it. That's what the real deal is, you know. Don't tell me about what your recovery's like whenever, you know, things are going well. Tell me about what it's like whenever things are going hard or rough and the adversity hits, you know. I'm glad to be down here. I heard someone share, I think it was Mariner, was talking about this being the first convention. I came out of penitentiary. One of my friends said, you want to go to this convention? I said, I don't have no money. He said, I didn't ask you that. He said, you want to go to a convention? I said, well, how am I going to get there? He said, do you want to go? And I came down here. This was the first whole convention I ever attended. You know, I attended the convention back in our region for a Saturday, but I never went from start to finish. And I came down 1 or 2 years, and then I disappeared, and I came down with my sponsor, and ain't been back, and I came last year, and it's just nice to be here and be part of recovery. Thanks for letting me share.
I'm an addict named Shamina, and I just want to say that it's an honor to be here at a Narcotics Anonymous convention. I certainly wasn't expecting really to be here in Maryland, Ocean City, standing here right at this podium, you know. It wasn't nothing planned. I remember, like, early on in my recovery, by the grace of God, I have 10 years clean. I remember early on in my recovery how I used to just, everything had to be, like, planned. But you see, coming around here and going through some things, you know, I learned that, like, it's really about living life one day at a time. You know, a few years ago, I got diagnosed with lupus, and you know, like the fellow said before me, it's about going through, you know, adversity and going through the storms and just going through it and getting to the other side, you see. Because I had a lot of good times in this process, in this recovery of mine. And I certainly had a lot of suffering. You know, I endured a lot of suffering, too, clean. You know, I was diagnosed with lupus, you know, first of all, you know. And it was like, okay, what's that? You know, and then learning about what it was. Then when I realized what it was, you know, they say it's like an inflammatory disease when, you know, you're autoimmune body cells attack your body parts, you know, and then there's all these different side effects, you know, and I've been through some of the side effects, you know, and all this happened to me clean, you know. And it was devastating, you know, because physically I went through a lot of changes, you know. Right now, you know, I'm walking with a cane, but I'm grateful to stand here before y'all, you know, young in recovery. I came in this program when I was 22. I'm 31 now, and you know, I said, why me? But I said, why not me? You know, my higher power is using me, you know, And I don't question it. I just sit back and just one day at a time, you know, live my life. I have pain every day. I have to get my other hip replaced. And until I do, the pain will be relieved, you know, but there's that thought of something may go wrong during the surgery. And then I'm still recuperating from the left hip getting replaced. But it's all just a part of the process. And the most important thing is that I just don't pick up, you know. I'd like to thank you for sharing, Bob. Bob's been a very inspirational person in my life. He do help out the newcomers. You know, I was one of those newcomers. And I got to watch him and see what this recovery process was like early on. I never expect to get 10 years clean. Never. But I gave myself a break. I was one of them ones, if I hadn't went into a rehab and got myself together, they would have took my children away from me. My children are with me today. They were 17 and 12, two daughters. And I'm just grateful, you know, just grateful to be here. I remember seeing Bob with his leg, you know, but it's about going through stuff, you know. I don't know. I'm just grateful to be here. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you for those who shared. Can we close the meeting with a moment?